The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Welcome to the Trumpet Daily Program. I'm Dwight Falk filling in for Stephen Fleury today. And we appreciate you joining us live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central Time. And of course, you can watch the live video stream at thetrumpet.com /live. So a lot of people like to watch that way, or you can get the podcast later, wherever you like to get your podcasts. But we appreciate you joining us live as well. Lots going on in the news to cover today. We'll talk about a few main topics, and then we'll end with a Bible study segment. So one of the big things that's going on right now, of course, in the news is the January 6th hearings, where they're having these trials, and I guess if you want to call it that, and they're these hearings, I guess, and bringing in different witnesses and so forth to talk about what happened on January 6th. And so it's been on the news. It was a primetime event last week. I watched maybe an hour of it, and it's not an easy thing to watch because of just how lopsided it is and how much it's just propaganda. There was a write-up from Mark Levin, and it says, Mark Levin calls January 6th hearings a sham and an abomination to the American system. And this was a write-up from Fox News. Mark Levin talked about this. It says, host Mark Levin of Life, Liberty, and Levin slammed the January 6th, quote, sham hearings on his show over the weekend, calling it an abomination to the U.S. political system. He also said the hearings were driven by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her party's hatred of former President Donald Trump. Well, if you have seen any of the hearings, or if you have looked at any of the news about it, you can see that's very clear. There's a real hatred for President Trump. There's a real effort to demonize him and to make it so that he could never be involved in politics again. They hate him, and they have a real fear of him because he's so popular. He's so popular, and he's calling the left out on their agenda, and he's been doing that for quite a while, and really is exposing in a lot of ways what they're up to. And they don't like that, of course. And so they're really going after him, even though he's been out of office, technically, for some time. This is a sham, Levin monologued. He said, this will go down in history as a dark mark on the American political system. And it will. They're trying to make the January 6th protests this big dark thing. But really what's dark is these hearings about it and the whole attention being drawn to it and how it's being shown as to be this huge insurrection, when in fact it was nothing of the sort. Nothing of the sort. And it's a terrifying thing when the country you live in isn't going after justice. You know, that's one of the hallmarks of America, it has been, is that you're innocent until you're proven guilty. But that's not the case here. And Mr. Fleury has been talking about that on the Trumpet Daily, these two-tiered justice system, right, where, you know, some people can get away with some things, others can't. It's this two-tiered system. We're seeing that on display. It says, we can't see it now. This is Levin speaking. He says, we can't see it now, but the mob is in control. The mob runs the media. The propaganda is full-throated. You can't see it now, but history has a way of sobering events. Now, I agree that history will show a lot more about this, but I also think you can see it now. I mean, it's pretty clear. It's pretty clear, I think, but it's not as maybe apparent as it will be in the future. He says, and we will see this one day as this outrageous attack on our system, on the prior president, on scores of people, that it truly is. So, I mean, it is an attack on President Trump. It's an attack on those that support him. It's an attack on America. And, of course, we have a booklet, America Under Attack, and it's being updated. And it's going to be have a lot more material in it, and it's going to be available very soon. And so that's something to really request, make sure that you make a note of it, to get that book when it comes out, America Under Attack. You can see it on your screen there. And all of our literature is free. You can call 1-866-930-3024, 1-866-930-3024, and request any of our literature. You can go to thetrumpet.com as well. America Under Attack, I mean, we do have a version of it, but there's this bigger version that's coming because there's been so many attacks that have happened. And we're going to see that in a few stories today, how there is an attack against the country. And this January 6th hearing is certainly one of those. Levin said these hearings, it's an abomination to the American system, not just of justice, but our congressional and representative system. And it really is. It is absolutely just like he says. It's an attack. And it's a very, it's a sham, as he says. And so if you haven't seen any of it, we do have some of the, lowlights put together. This is some of the hearings from last week, if we could play clip one.
Donald Trump was at the center of this conspiracy. And ultimately, Donald Trump, the president of the United States, spurred a mob of domestic enemies of the Constitution to march down the Capitol and subvert American democracy. Any legal jargon you hear about seditious conspiracy, obstruction of an official proceeding, conspiracy to defraud the United States boils down to this. January 6th was the culmination of an attempted coup.
Over multiple months, Donald Trump oversaw and coordinated a sophisticated 7-part plan to overturn the presidential election and prevent the transfer of presidential power. You will hear about members of the Trump cabinet discussing the possibility of invoking the 25th Amendment and replacing the President of the United States. You will hear that President Trump was yelling and, quote, really angry at advisors who told him he needed to be doing something more. And aware of the rioters' chance to hang Mike Pence, the president responded with this sentiment, quote, maybe our supporters have the right idea. Mike Pence, quote, deserves it.
I made it clear I did not agree with the idea of saying the election was stolen and putting out this stuff, which I told the president was I didn't want to be a part of it, and that's one of the reasons that went into me deciding to leave when I did.
What I saw was just a war scene. It was something like I had seen out of the movies. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were officers on the ground, they were bleeding, they were throwing up, I saw friends with blood all over their faces. I was slipping in people's blood. I was catching people as they fell. It was carnage. It was chaos.
I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Do you believe them? Do you believe that, what they're saying? Do you think there's some embellishment there? Or do you think it's being made more than what actually happened? I don't believe them. I don't believe them. I mean, just even looking at the footage that they played back, and they're really trying. I mean, they're really trying to make it seem very dramatic. And I watched some of it. I watched some of that live. I watched the footage. It didn't look anything like what they're saying. It didn't look anything like they're saying. And there's a lot of things that they're not, of course, talking about. They don't want to get into the other side of it and the other people's experiences. But the thing about this is, and I think also a lot of people recognize that this is really being overdone and exaggerated in many ways, because you can see the clips like that, and then you read the comments people make, and most people are like, come on, you're way overdoing this. You're way overdoing this. There's the footage. You can see it. There's the great insurrection. And they're talking about it like it's the worst thing that's ever happened. I mean, that looks like I've seen more aggressive people at Walmart trying to get a special than that. I mean, it's incredible that we can see that footage, and then we're told this wild story about how this was like the great uprising, the great insurrection, and we're supposed to believe it. We're supposed to believe it. Now, okay, if you trespass, there is a penalty for that. Obviously, we don't condone that type of thing. There's a penalty for it, but it's not what they're making it out to be. And I think what I want to bring out in particular about this is just a little bit of a historical perspective. Okay, so has anything like this ever happened before? Has there ever been like these big trumped up show trials, if you want to call them that? Absolutely, there have been. Soviet Union did that. The Soviet Union did that. This has happened before in history. Encyclopedia Britannica talks about this, and maybe you've read some about this. It's very important history when we look at what's happening today. It says the Great Purge, also called purge trials. These are three widely publicized show trials and a series of closed, unpublicized trials held in the Soviet Union during the late 1930s, in which many prominent old Bolsheviks were found guilty of treason and executed or imprisoned. So you have Stalin come in, and he wants to get rid of the old guard. He has to, because he wants to take over. So what does he do? Well, he eliminates people. He blots them out the best that he could. And so they use these trials, and there's a lot of history about it. And it's good to go back and look at a little bit of it. And then think about what's happening today. It says all the evidence presented in court was derived from preliminary examinations of the defendants and from their confessions. They made them confess. You can do that, you know, if you keep somebody in jail long enough, in prison, take away, you know, the ability to see their family, to work, to do those things. You could get people to confess all kinds of things. It says it was subsequently established that the accused were innocent. History proved that the accused were innocent. You know, Mark Levin says, look, and down the road in history, we'll see what a sham this is. That was very much true of the Soviet Union. At the time, they were found guilty of treason. But the reality was that they were innocent. History showed that. It's been subsequently established that the accused were innocent, that the cases were fabricated by the secret police, and that the confessions were made under pressure of intensive torture and intimidation. That happened in the Soviet Union. And I just wonder if anybody watches these show trials today and says, well, that seems familiar. Like, that seems like that's happened before. There was an open letter that was posted. It was at Citizen Free Press last week. Open letter from a January 6th political prisoner. We have political prisoners in this country that have just been intimidated. Some have been kept locked away. This person hasn't been, but they've still been intimidated. And here's what they had to say. They said, so I went to D.C. to support the way I thought best. They were at this January 6th get-together, I guess. And it says, I wasn't violent. I didn't break anything. I didn't steal anything. And that doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I lost my six-figure income, my friends. My family is a wreck. I had the FBI in my home. I was brought before a judge in shackles. Yeah, it says this is America. This is in probably a suburb. I don't know where this person's from, but they made a good income, so they must have had a nice area, lived in a nice area. It says, and I am the lucky one. I got to remain free until sentencing. They say, this person says, we are no longer free, and this country was taken without firing a single shot. Yeah, there's treason, all right. But it's not going on with these protesters. There's treason at high levels. It says guns are meaningless at this point. It was the First Amendment that people should have been fighting for the most. I am now barely making a living doing manual labor for just over minimum wage until my sentencing is over. I was threatened with 20 years in prison. 20 years in prison for being at a protest. For being at a protest. 20 years in prison. Something only murderers face. And sometimes they get out sooner than that. The person says, we couldn't change the venue and none of the motions to dismiss were accepted, so they wouldn't, you know, help them out in any legal ways. He says, so at the pleading of my wife, the extreme bias of D.C. and its jury pool of my peers, quote unquote, and advice from my lawyer, I destroyed a part of me and signed a paper full of exaggerations. Just remember the history. We just read about these show trials. where it says that confessions were made under pressure and intensive torture and intimidation. And then you flash forward to today, and this person's writing about the exact same procedures. Maybe they were done in a little bit of a different way, I don't know. But the same playbook. The same playbook, because it's a communist playbook. He says, I destroyed a part of me and signed a paper full of exaggerations, lies, and more importantly, a narrative that fits what they want. That's what they are going after, even in this. I'll just call it a show trial. That's what's happening today. The January 6th hearing, it's a show trial. It's a show trial to just push forward their narrative, and they'll find the people that'll say what they want them to say. And just because you have some people that are saying something that agrees with the narrative, that doesn't make it true. It's just what they're saying. And you watch those show trials from last week, and I guess it's still going on, and you just see people making up stories, exaggerating. Now, I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what happened and didn't happen in every instance. But they really are trying to turn on the emotion and trying to turn on the drama and trying to turn on all these different things. And then you look at the footage and it's pretty minimal. It's pretty minimal. But those are the people that have been either intimidated or are along with the flow of things to support the narrative. So it's a show trial. So what is it? What do we know? Just if we look at history, what do we know? Well, it's the same playbook that's happened before. And who does it? Who does those things? Who puts on show trials? The Communist Party does. They do that. They put on show trials. Some more history from those show trials from the Soviet Union. And just listen to the history and then think about what you see today and see if you can see a connection. It says the trials successfully eliminated the major real and potential political rivals and critics of Joseph Stalin. That was the whole point. Get it out there. I mean, do it sort of in public, make it look official because, you know, after all, they're sitting there and they're trying to sound official. But the whole point was very basic, and that was to eliminate the major real and potential political rivals and critics of Joseph Stalin. So these modern day show trials are to get rid of President Trump and his supporters, any threat to a full-on communist takeover. That's exactly what's happening. That's why these show trials are happening today. The trials, it says, were the public aspect of the widespread purge that sent millions of alleged enemies of the people to prison camps in the 1930s. So if you've read about the Gulag and that history, it's a horrible history. It's a horrible history, but we see the same playbook happening again. It's the exact same thing. The motivations, the purpose, the intent, the goals of this modern-day show trial are the same as they were back then in the 30s in the Soviet Union. It's to get rid of political rivals and to make it all official-like. Because I was out here in public, and we had some people that, you know, said that this happened. So, you know, imagine yourself in that situation. If somebody was accusing you of something and you had to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt your innocence, you know, so it's flipped. So you're not innocent to proven guilty. You're guilty till you're proven innocent. And there's no way you can do that, especially when you've got this jury of your peers, quote unquote, that they're not going to listen to you one way or the other, unless you bend to their narrative. So when you read about the history of that purge time there in the Soviet Union, it was horrifying. People would get hauled in, you know, because their neighbor said something about them. Why did their neighbor say something about them? Because either they thought they were against the communist regime, or they just said something to get themselves out of trouble or try to. And then they just kept, you know, getting people in and putting them through these sham situations, and they ended up in those prison camps, as it says. That's what happened there in the 30s. And listen to this. See if something like this has happened as well. It says, in addition to the so-called show trials, a series of closed trials of top Soviet military leaders was held in 1937 and 38, in which a number of prominent military leaders were eliminated. They had to get rid of the military guys, too. Has that happened here? Have we had a turnover in the military? Have people been fired, put out to pasture, so to speak, and replaced? Yeah, of course they have, because they didn't go along with the narrative. If you just look at a little bit of history, and you pay attention to it, you see it's the exact same playbook that's happening now. It's the exact same thing. Stephen Fleury wrote this at the trumpet.com. He said, KGB defector Yuri Bezmenov taught that there are four phases to the communist takeover of a nation. The first phase is called demoralization. It involves the ideological brainwashing of an entire generation of people. The second phase is called the destabilization. It consists of stirring up severe societal problems in the target country to create a crisis. Have we seen a few crises? Yes, we have. The third state is the crisis, where, you know, everyone's running around and this is a crisis. And then the fourth is called normalization. This is where communists stabilize, quote unquote, the nation under their control. So they're saying, look, what's the biggest threat to the U.S. right now? Well, it's white supremacy, I guess. That's what they're saying. So, you know, and they've got to get rid of those people that think that way, and so they can stabilize everything. But, of course, it's just to stabilize it under their control. Further, Mr. Fleury wrote, the radical left is not using its influence for healing and reconciliation. I mean, just think about that in relation to these show trials of today, these hearings. Is there healing and reconciliation there? No, it's just to stir it up. It's just to stir it up and accuse and get rid of potential enemies. He says it is stirring up a race war. We've seen that, certainly. We have to understand why. He said critical race theory was invented to pit races against each other. So he's getting into some of those other aspects of what is happening now. The radical left's involved in all of that. But it says, but the root cause of this hatred and division goes deeper than critical race theory and all other forms of cultural, economic, and militant Marxism. And, of course, it goes back to what? Satan the devil. Is there a spirit being? Is there a Satan the devil that hates America? That hates anything that God would have worked with and worked through and established? Of course. And we've written a lot about that, and America Under Attack has a lot of those details. These show trials are just another example of that. Trying to blot out the name of Israel, trying to blot out America, trying to blot out any semblance of what America was established as. Not perfect, obviously. But still, trying to give people freedom, trying to give people liberty, trying to be fair. You know, for people that came out of that Soviet system, to come to a country where normally you could actually have a fair trial and have your side spoken and the other side, and then you could look at the facts in the case and make a decision. I mean, what freedom, what liberty there is when they came out of that show trial prison system of the Soviet Empire. But we're going right into that. And so a lot of times when people talk about what's happening to America today, the ones that are really alarmed are the ones that have come from those countries because they've been through it and they know what's happening. Don't be tricked by this show trial. Don't be tricked by this stuff. It's a show trial, and it's been done before, and it's being done to only try to eliminate political opponents. That's all it is. It's a show trial, and that history is there in the Soviet Union. You can look at that, and it's being done here in this country as well. Well, there's another, of course, major concern, and one of the things that people talk about when they're talking about this January 6th, these hearings, is a lot of people say they're not interested in it because inflation is going crazy. There's so much inflation out there that, you know, they're trying to deal with the day in and day out of just making ends meet. They're not into the political back and forth. They just want to be able to have gas they can afford, food they can afford, and so forth. Inflation is skyrocketing. And there's a clip here that I want to play that really it's pretty alarming to listen to this man and what he has to say. And again, it gives great insight. He doesn't see why it's happening. He doesn't see why America's being attacked. He doesn't see Satan in that. He doesn't see that power. But he does see that we're being attacked. And he sees that it's happening. And he's just really upset by it and pretty anxious, as you'll see in this clip, about the inflation that's going on now. This is clip two.
Oil prices climbing this morning. Brent and West Texas Intermediate both up about half of a dollar per barrel, $1.19, $1.20 for Brent, $1.19 for West Texas Intermediate. This is the national average for a gallon of regular unleaded, hitting an all-time high this morning of $4.86 a gallon. Diesel at another new record high of $5.64 a gallon today. Joining me now, the chairman and CEO of United Refining Company, Gristides and D'Agostino Foods, also the Red Apple Group chief, John Catsimatidis. John, will this only get worse for the American people?
It will get worse, which is very, very sad. It doesn't have to happen. As I said before last week, a recession does not have to happen. What the obsession that President Biden has with not turning on the spigots in North America, in Canada, Alaska, and let America, North America, we have 100 years worth of oil. Let them open up the spigots and the price of crude oil will come back down to 55, 60, maybe 65, half. Nobody can understand. All the people I talk to, nobody can understand why this obsession with North America. He wants to fly to Saudi Arabia and beg the Saudi Arabians to give us another 500,000 barrels at $120 a barrel. Does that make any sense at all? It makes no sense. And what's going to happen? He wants to force the, and I disagree with our own economists, that our own friends, that they raise the interest rates by the Fed, because what's going to happen? Instead of bringing down the price of oil and controlling recession, increase the price of interest rates, and guess what? It'll wipe out the real estate industry. It'll wipe out everything else in America. Somebody is on a path to try to destruct America, and somebody has to say, guys, enough is enough. I hope we have enough common sense Democratic senators to say enough is enough. Why are we destroying America? And you know what the cost of has been to the American people because of the rising gas prices, the cost of the rising food prices? It's going to go even higher. With $120 oil, it's going to go even higher. I am begging.
I love what he said, because you can see just how upset he is, because he says, this doesn't have to happen. We don't have to do this. We don't. Why are we paying so much for gas? You know, and he's right on the trail of it, but he can't quite get there, which is, somebody's trying to destroy America. This is intentional. There's no reason for us to be paying this much. There's no reason for this inflation. No reason at all. Unless you're trying to burn down the system so you can rebuild it and then control it in your, you know, the way that the left wants to. That's what's happening. But he's like, why would you do this? And that's a very logical question. Why would you destroy your own country? Why would you do that? Again, it gets back to our book, America Under Attack, which, again, is going to come out with a new edition that's going to have a lot more in it. Somebody's attacking America. Is it just the political party? Well, there's that element, but there's a power behind that. And I know people, you know, if they're not reading their Bibles and thinking about that, they say, well, that seems a little odd. You know, I don't know about that. But how else can you explain it? You see a lot of people like that are exasperated. Like, why would you destroy yourself? Why would you do that? It makes no sense. And so they're looking at it in this very logical numbers way, and they can't, it doesn't, the equation doesn't work. There's nothing about it that makes sense. We don't have to pay that price for gas. We could be energy independent. We've got plenty, but yet we don't use it. And then we're going and buying it from other nations that don't have our interest at heart. You know, what sense does it make? So you can just see people grappling with this. Why is this happening? Well, it gets back to a spirit power. It gets back to Satan the devil. America's being attacked. Satan's trying to blot out the name of Israel. And again, that's not something you hear anywhere else. But that's what's happening. That's what's happening. And there's a real effort there to destroy and to devour America. and devour our resources and devour our assets. And, you know, the Bible has plenty to say about that, and we can't get into all of it, but there is one thing I want to mention to you, and it's in Malachi 3, the book of Malachi, where it talks about the devourer. Now, ultimately, that's Satan the devil. He wants to devour. He wants to destroy. But there is good news for people that will support God's message, that will support this warning message that's going out. And like the man said in the interview there, who's going to stand up and say enough's enough? Stop it. Well, there's nobody to do that. But God will at some point. Now, ultimately, there's quite a bit that happens, and you can look into those prophecies, and we have a lot at thetrumpet.com about that. We can't get into all those details today, but God does make promises to those that will support him and help him, and that he will, in fact, stop that type of activity, or he'll make a path of escape, or however he'll do it, he'll stop the devourer. You can see this in Malachi 3 and verse 10, where he's talking about tithes and offerings and giving to him. God does command that. That is something that he requires of people, and we have material at thetrumpet.com that talks about that. But it says in verse 10, bring all the tithes into the storehouse that there may be meat in my house. In other words, God has a work that has to be done. And in this case, this part of it anyway is warning the world about what's coming, about the real reason for the things that you see happening. Somebody's got to warn. So God has a work there. He says, you bring that those tithes into my house, so there's meat in my house. And then he says, prove me, says the Eternal of Hosts, if I will not open up you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing that there shall not be room enough to receive it. God promises to bless those that do support his work and support him and follow his lead and his direction in their lives. There, you can look at the Leviticus 26, look at that chapter at some other point if you'd like to, and there, that principle is there. God gave that to ancient Israel. It's applicable today to everybody, where there are blessings for obedience and there's curses for disobedience. And so God promises if people will obey him, he'll bless them. And then verse 11 here in Malachi 3, it says, and I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, says the Eternal of Hosts. So God makes a promise here. He'll rebuke the devourer. Satan wants to devour everything, and those that are heavily influenced by him and his plan of attack, they're out there trying to devour. You know, that man said, talking about the prices, why are we doing this? We don't have to do this. Why are we being devoured? He didn't say devoured, but that's the essence of what he was saying. He doesn't see the spiritual connection. But he says, why? Why would we do this? Well, because Satan's the devourer. He wants to destroy. He wants to destroy. And he'll devour and destroy everything unless God stops him, because he just has so much power. The Bible's clear on that point. But God says he'll rebuke the devourer for those that support him and support his work. He'll do that. And he will intervene and help in many ways. Even in this nation, there's prophecies that there will be intervention and help, at least temporarily. So God will intervene, and he will make sure that those that are supporting him and that are supporting his work, that he'll take care of them in many ways. Those are the type of promises that we have to think a lot about, and we have to trust in, because what else are we going to trust in? We're going to trust in, you know, the economic system. I mean, it's getting pretty bad. It's getting pretty bad. And so we have to really think about the fact that in Titus 1 and verse 2, there's a promise there also where God says he cannot lie. He cannot lie. So if he makes a promise and he says, look, I'll rebuke the devourer if you will obey me, then we can trust that. We can trust that, and we need to really think about those promises and trust him, and then step out in faith and obey him. You know, I know there's certainly plenty of people that listen to this program that, you know, do have some affiliation with God's work over the years, and, you know, listen, but don't do a whole lot about it. Well, we're getting to that point where we're all going to be devoured if we're not really supporting God. That's just what the Bible shows. You know, how high can gas prices go? How high can food prices go? How long will people just sort of sit there and, you know, take it? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. But if we don't have God helping us and protecting us and rebuking the devourer, then we're on our own. And it's going to be not a good situation. So we certainly need to be trusting God, trusting His promises, and obeying Him and supporting His work. And then we can count on that promise that He'll rebuke the devourer for our sakes. And we can see that happen, and we'll see that more and more as we go and as inflation continues to skyrocket. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to do a little Bible study with the time remaining about Christianity. What is Christianity? How do we live if we're a Christian? We'll look at that right after this. You're watching the Trumpet Daily program. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily program. The literature being offered there, that's all free, of course, at thetrumpet.com, as was mentioned. You can also call 1-866-930-3024, 1-866-930-3024, and request that literature. America Under Attack, as I mentioned a few times, is being revamped. There's a lot more being added to it because the attack has gotten even worse here recently. So you really want to get that. It's going to be an awesome book, and it's going to show you why these things are happening. And that's where other news outlets and things, they have some good reporting, and they might get into some good details, but they're at a loss because, why is this happening, and what's going on, and so forth, where America Under Attack is going to get to the heart of it. So you really do need that book, and you can get that for free there at 1-866-930-3024. Well, there's a lot of people that claim to be Christian. They would identify that way as a Christian. And Christianity is a way of life. What way of life is that? Well, a Christian does have to follow certain biblical standards. There are standards to God's way of life. Acts 18 and verse 26 refers to the way of God. There's a way to go, to live. And that way is something that happened and was instituted long before mankind even, because God, who became the Father, and the Word, who became Christ, they've always lived this way. They've always been unified. They've always worked together. And their way of life was codified in the Ten Commandments. Paul talked about this in Acts 24. Paul was being persecuted for being a Christian, for living according to God's way. And Paul said in Acts 24 and verse 14, he says, "But this I confess unto you, that after the way which they call heresy," so he was living a way, and it was God's way, but the people around him said, that's heresy. He says, "So worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets." So he's talking there about the Old Testament. God's way of life goes back to the Old Testament and before then even. But he's talking about being written in the law and in the prophets. So he was looking at the Old Testament, he was looking at the laws, and he was living that way. And the people of his day said, that's heresy. He said, but I'm just living as it's written there and recorded in the Old Testament. God does have a definite way that we have to go if we are to be Christian. our free correspondence course, which again is free, and you can sign up for that at thetrumpet.com. It's the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. But it notes this. It says, a vital point to understand is that the Christian way of life has its roots in the Old Testament. It is established on the Ten Commandments, as well as the other laws of God, which are based on principles of the basic ten. So God gives us these laws that we are to follow. And as we follow them, it's very practical. We will have success. Doesn't mean we'll never have a test or a trial, of course, but there's going to be a success. Success in finance, success in family, success in our mental state, our emotional state. Those are things that people are really struggling with in the world today. Of course, there's, you know, the issues with the school shootings and things like that, and other mass shootings, and people are always talking about weapons and not really talking about the law of God. Well, I mean, should people follow that law? I guess the thinking is, well, that's naive. No one's going to, so we need to restrict the guns. Well, if God's law was followed, those problems go away. That's not naive. That's the only way to solve them. It's the only way to solve those problems. But a Christian, a true Christian, learns to think and act and live like God lives. That's what it means to be Christian. That's a successful way of life. And God's way can be summed up really in one word, and that word is love. But of course, we have to understand what love is. The world has a lot of ideas about love. But we have to see what God says about love. 1 John 5 and verse 3 gives us the definition that God has for us when it comes to love. 1 John 5 and verse 3, it says, "For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous." God has these laws, Ten Commandments, and then, of course, there's things that build upon that. But they are not grievous. They're actually love. That's God's law of love. If people had followed those, and if we all did that, as we should, we wouldn't have the problems in this world. We wouldn't have the shootings. We wouldn't have those issues. We wouldn't have them, because we'd be loving each other as we should, and that means keeping the commandments. Keeping God's commandments, that's what a Christian does. A Christian lives love, but it's God's love, and it is following these laws. Following these laws. The correspondence course says the Apostle James referred to the Ten Commandments as the royal law of liberty. That's in James 2, verses 8 through 12. The royal law of liberty. And that is because they free those who keep them from the bondage of the hurtful ways of this world. The Ten Commandments reveal the great love God has for his children. And so again, you can just really, if you want to, meditate on this. You can think about God's law and think about any situation that you might see on the news, you know, a crime or a problem. And then think about, okay, well, what law of God or combination of laws could you put into effect if you had the power to do that? And it will happen at Christ's return. That will be enforced. But what laws could you put into play that would solve it? That would solve it. It's really an awesome thing to think about. There are solutions. And we're at a time where people are, I think, feeling more and more helpless and hopeless because they don't see solutions to the problems. They don't see how to solve all these issues. Well, it gets back to the Ten Commandments. Now, again, people might say, well, that's naive. No, it's not. That is the solution to the problems. And the beautiful thing about it is, even though individually we don't have the power to enforce it on the, you know, all of humanity today, God's laws, we can do that in our own lives. I mean, that's where God's given us the power to make decisions. Okay, so what will we do in our lives? Will we follow the law? This law that frees us from the penalties of breaking it. I mean, that's a loving God that says, look, I live a way that's successful, it's full of joy, it's full of happiness, and I want to share it with you. And here's how you do it. I mean, that's the greatest gift in the sense of a law that we could be given. And of course, we need God's Spirit to really understand that and follow it as we should. And God gives that gift to those that he calls and they repent and are baptized. But this law is a royal law. It's a law that frees us. This knowledge, this information, it frees us. And that's the way that a Christian lives. A true Christian follows the law of God. John 5 or John 15, Christ talked about this in John 15, verses 10 through 11. He said, "If you keep my commandments, you shall abide in my love." So, you know, if you asked somebody that said they were Christian, you know, "Do you love Christ?" They'd say yes. But the real answer to that is, okay, but it's a matter of keeping the commandments. If we love Christ, we keep the commandments. "If you keep my commandments, you shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love." Christ didn't do away with his Father's commandments. He kept them perfectly. "These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full." Full joy. I mean, that's what we all want. We want to be happy. We want to be joyful. We want full joy. The way that we have full joy is by keeping God's law. You know, you can think about just how, you know, any of the commandments, when they're broken, they destroy joy. The school shootings, right? People killing each other, breaking God's law. It destroyed joy in everybody's life in that situation. Any one of those shootings, you can think of a variety of them. The most recent one there was in Texas, but you can think about any of them. The person that did the killing, the family of that person, the people that were killed, their families. The joy has been taken away. And why is it? Why did it get destroyed? It's because the law was broken. But a true Christian is going to have full joy and be growing in that, because they'll be growing in keeping the law, solving the problems that we see. And that can come up in the challenges, and then apply God's law to it and say, okay, well, here's a challenge in my life. What does God's law say about it, and how can I solve it? That's an awesome thing, to know how to solve it, to know how to fix it. You go to people don't go to bookstores too much these days, but you go online and look for books or other materials, and one of the biggest genres is self-help. People are always looking for help. They're looking for ways to calm their anxiety. They're looking for ways to be happy. They're looking for ways to get along with people better. All of those things that people really are sincerely looking for answers for, the answers to all of that's in the law of God. It's all in there. My joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. Christ told his disciples to keep God's law so that they might have full joy. So when we consider our own lives, if we find a lack of joy, then the answer is pretty clear based upon Christ's words here. That means somewhere the law is not really being put in effect the way that it should be. But the good news is then that can be fixed. And we can have joy because the law can be implemented. The law can be implemented. God wants us to have full joy, and that's the way he lives. That's the way he lives. That's the way that a Christian will live. That's a Christian life, is obeying the law of God. And it's a joyful life. Obeying the law doesn't make it a boring life or a sad life. It makes it an abundant life. It frees a person from all of the negative results that come from breaking God's law. A Christian will really love Christ and love God the Father. And Christ defined how we are to do that in John 14 and verse 15, and I mentioned it a little earlier. Really pithy, simple statement here from Christ, but something to really consider. John 14 and verse 15, Christ says, "If you love me," and a Christian would say, "I love Christ," that would be something that I'm sure they would all say that they do, "but if you love me, keep my commandments." Keep my commandments. That's what a Christian does. That's how we show our love to God and we show our love to fellow man. Of course, the commandments are broken down into those two segments, loving God more than ourselves, our neighbor as ourselves. So there's a lot about that. We have a book on the Ten Commandments that's at thetrumpet.com that gets into the Ten Commandments and just really expounds upon them, gets into the depth of them, and shows us how to keep them more effectively. Because sometimes maybe we think we're keeping a commandment, but we're not seeing the nuances of it. We're not maybe seeing the depth of it. You know, we don't realize that we're not doing it as we should. You know, if you talk about idolatry, and obviously God's law says that we are not to have idols, I think a lot of people may think like, okay, well, I don't have any like statues or anything, you know, but anything that's put in front of God is an idol. If we're more interested in, well, you name it, there could be a lot of things. Anything that we put in front of God, that's an idol. So it breaks that command. So there's a lot of depth to God's law that we need to think about and understand so that we can have joy. We can really have that full joy. That Christian life is a life of joy, but that's joy that comes from keeping God's commandments. That's the only place that joy comes from. Sometimes we think of joy maybe as you know, that temporary excitement over something. Well, we can have temporary excitement, but that's not really joy because it fades. It doesn't last. You know, we get something new. We're excited about that. People get into a new relationship. They get excited about that, but it doesn't last, the excitement. That's excitement. The real joy that lasts and grows and builds and ultimately builds to eternal life in God's kingdom and family really comes from keeping the commandments. And of course, we need God's Spirit to empower us and give us that understanding and that help that we need to do it. But we can all look at this and really make a better effort, you know, wherever we are in that process. Look at the commandments and really try to put them into practice. Verse 21 here in John 14, he says, Christ says, "He that has my commandments and keeps them, he it is that loves me." That's who loves Christ. It's the person that has the commandments and keeps them. So just having them is not enough. Knowing them or, you know, having a plaque on the wall or a sign on the fridge with them, that's great, but we have to keep them, keeping them. It says, "And he that loves me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him and will manifest myself to him." He continues in verse 23. Jesus answered and said unto him, "If a man love me," so that, again, there's so much talk about love here, but it's not the way the world always kind of thinks about love, sort of that syrupy emotion maybe. Now, there's some emotion attached to it, but this is keeping the commandments. That's what this love is. "If a man love me, he will keep my words." Keep the words of God, all of them, by the way, all of them that are in there. Even the ones that maybe society doesn't like to look at today. You know, some of the societal changes that we see about us, does God have anything to say about that? He actually does. And some people say, well, that's not love to point that out. Well, it certainly is love to be free of all those penalties that come from certain lifestyles. Having God's commands and keeping them. "And he that loves me shall be loved of my Father," it says. And there's a lot of love there, but again, that's God's love, and it comes from God's Spirit, and it empowers people to keep his commandments. Jesus answered and said unto him, I think I read this already, "But if a man love me, he will keep my words further, and my Father will love him, and he will come unto him and make our abode with him." We'll have that relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ. Verse 24, "And he that loves me not keeps not my sayings." So he's very clear here too. If a person claims to love Christ, they claim to be Christian, but they don't keep the commandments, they don't love Christ. And they're not truly a Christian. And they're not obeying God. They're not going in that direction. It says, "And the word which you hear is not mine, but the Father's which sent me." So Christ was always pointing back to his Father. He kept his Father's commands. He tells us to do the same, to follow his example, to keep his sayings. Verse 31, "But that the world may know that I love the Father, and as the Father gave me commandment, even so I do." See, Christ set us a perfect example in that. He didn't just talk about keeping the commandments. He did it himself first, and he did it perfectly. And then we're to go in that same way. That's the Christian way of life. Following Christ, walking as Christ walked. And how did he walk? Well, he did everything that his Father told him to do. He kept all those commandments. We have a great book on the Ten Commandments that gets into more detail on that. And you can find that at thetrumpet.com or 1-866-930-3024. You can also sign up for the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence course. That's a free course, and it's there at thetrumpet.com as well. So lots to look at there and study into, and really grow in joy and excitement, even as the world has less and less of that. Well, thanks for spending some time with me today here on the Trumpet Daily Program. Again, if you'd like any of the literature offered today, go to thetrumpet.com or 1-866-930-3024. Talk to you later.